Power User Podcast, where unprofessional podcasting sounds better. I'm your host, Kristen Hatcher, and the usual suspects are Derek Batting of NeoWin.net. Hello, Derek.
Hello, Kristen. Hello, everyone.
And Tom Chick of Quarter2Three.com.
Hi, hello, Tom. Everyone. Hi, happy holidays.
And Brad Wardell of WinCustomize.com.
You know, I'm already bored. We're only like 30 seconds in, you've already lost my attention. I'm already ready to get back to scratching, which is always an interesting
which
thing
is
to
your normal pastime.
Well, you know, during hatching season, when the eggs start to come out of the skin, it's always great. Just sit there and just scratch at them for a while.
That's
really messed up. That makes me feel icky.
I know. I need a shower now.
Hey, you wanna, well, by the way, you're borrowing my headphones.
Get away from me, Brad. Just get away from me.
Moving right along, last week we talked about iTunes possibly raising the prices of their songs, and we all, I think, basically agreed that, you know, no, don't raise the price of the song. The song is at a good price right now.
What's even better? Free.
Yeah, free is even better, but for those of us law-abiding citizens who don't want to...
Hey, I don't know.
I'm just saying, there's a new service where you can download music directly to your cell phone. Sprint has launched a music service similar to iTunes, but, you know, obviously it's just through the cell phone. Now, with this cell phone, you cannot access iTunes. You have to go to their proprietary store. The first 5 downloads are free, so there you go, Brad. There's your free price point that you're looking for.
W00T.
Starting with the 6th download, you have to pay for the music. And can you guess what the price point is on the songs? Oh, I bet you can.
25 cents.
It's a good guess. That's a good guess. Well, ringtones are $2.50, roughly, right? That's about the average price. So apparently Sprint thought, hey, people will pay $2.50 for a ringtone, which is only a part of a song. They'll pay that much for the whole song. So in fact, the songs available on their service cost $2.50.
Okay. Well, what they don't seem to understand is people won't pay $2.50 for a song on a cell phone because the quality's not as good. And though it is portable, it's not a portable MP3 player. You can only fit like maybe 38 songs tops.
So they're not the same quality. You can't extract them from the phone and play them
No, you can't extract them from the phone. Also, with Sprint's limitations, you can only have the song on one phone. You can't transfer it to another phone, and you can't transfer it to a computer. You just download it, and it's stuck on your phone, and that's that.
Right, and there's only 2 phones available that will access this service.
Which ones?
I'll have to link the
yeah, one's a Samsung, and there's another one.
I bet is it the A800?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Because that's what I've got.
Well, there you go, Brad. You can be a sucker if you want to and go download music for $2.50 a pop.
Well, I've already got my phone so jam full of, you know, of really bad games
right.
That I bought for $4 per month because, you know, thank God now I can play Tetris when I'm at the movie theater.
Right, exactly. Well, Michael Goodman of the Yankee Group, you know, wanted to look at it this way. He said, you know, people are pretty good at on-the-fly math, in spite of, you know, Americans being bad at math in general, which is the stereotype. People understand money, right? So if you're paying 99 cents for a song and you equate that to an album of 10 or 12 songs, you're paying $10 to $12 for an entire album of songs, which is a pretty good deal, right? If you're paying $2.50 per song, that album would cost $25 to $30.
Yeah, so, but sometimes you just need the Macarena now, okay?
Yes.
Right then and there, huh?
Right then and there.
And for that, this is a good service. If you need it that instant, then by all means.
For that very, very small percentage of people who just simply cannot wait to get home in front of a computer, that's for you.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, they only have... iTunes has 2 million songs on their service. And
yeah, Sprint has 250,000.
Yeah.
So it's considerably less.
Just not the same. So, what do you think, Brad?
Well, what's the name of that song that where it's about a guy who's in a closet?
So, you're going to try and find
music
right now to buy it, right?
Well, if you guys would quit talking to my ear, then I could, like, you know, concentrate on my cell phone so I can get this stuff.
Here, Tom. We're losing Brad, Tom. Help us out.
You see, here's the deal.
Yeah.
I want, whenever I walk around the office, I want the Imperial Death March to follow me all the time.
Okay.
And I have a pretty good speaker, so I can just walk around and you hear, dun, 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 and then people know I'm coming.
Well, and the first five downloads are free, so you could.
I just make sure. It's like that time I made a deal with the devil when on a donut. And he didn't get my soul until I would eat the whole donut.
Right. You kept a crumb and you're fine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What he didn't know, what the devil didn't know, was that Google and Microsoft already each have half of your soul in a jar in their respective locations.
Yes.
So he couldn't have it anymore.
So, joke's on them.
That's right. Joke is on the devil. Okay.
That's right.
So, wow, that's interesting, Brad, because I was kind of taken aback by this story. I thought $250 for a song is way too much money, but sounds
actually,
like you're ready to go
Brad
download.
Did,
well, I
Brad
mean, I have bought over five songs total on so far with iTunes. So, I mean, I could see myself buying a song at some point. The thing is, anyone seriously into music would find this insane, but I don't know. I mean, I probably won't use it because I don't really buy music anyway. I just don't listen to music other than from, you know, when I'm playing video games, that's the music I'm listening to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, Civilization IV, wonderful soundtrack at Civ4.com.
Brad.
Sorry, yeah, I don't even...
Civ4.
But our listeners are so anxious to hear more about that game.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you think Soren listens to this podcast?
No.
Tom?
I don't.
He might. Who knows? Soren Johnson, for everyone else, being the lead designer on Civilization IV.
Right.
We could send it to him. Hi,
yeah.
Soren.
That's right. I mentioned it to him in email, but I don't know if he actually has listened.
Soren's probably a very busy man. He may not have time for podcast nonsense.
Right, but Brad does have time for that. Good one, Tom.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not good. It's not good to build yourself up by tearing people down.
All I can say is I'm sitting here too.
Are you scratching?
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Okay. I'd rather
it's more
not
of
say.
A burning than a scratch.
All right.
This podcast is no longer E10. It is now M for mature.
I was going to say, I'm just going to start cursing because we've crossed a line somewhere, I think. Well, here's some good news. There is two Nigerians and one British spammer in completely unrelated incidents have each been jailed for spamming. Yay! I'm
yeah, but
so
it's not
happy.
Their wait. There, it's not their fault that
no,
they
no.
were spamming. No,
I
they're
see.
Pissed off because they needed to make all the money back from all the old computers that they bought from the United States from recycling people.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm surprised you even remember that.
He was listening, Derek.
I was awake that episode.
The story on this British guy, Peter Francis McRae, he is now known as Britain's worst spammer. He sent emails tricking people into buying domain names with the .eu extension, which I don't think exists, and also demanded renewal fees for domain names of various companies. So he would just contact companies and ask for renewal fees, even though he had no connection with their provider, of course.
So wait. Are you saying we don't own neowin.eu?
I don't think we do.
Oh, crap.
He received $2.8 million US from his scams. And if a business complained about this guy, they were sent massive amounts of spam, and the police who investigated him said that they were threatened with gasoline bombs. And he also threatened a denial of service attack against the business that controls the .uk domain after they warned other businesses to be wary of invoices from him. So the judge, I guess, at the trial called Peter one of the most vindictive young men he has ever met.
And how long is he going to jail for?
Oh, who knows? 5 minutes?
6 years.
6 years.
Wait. So for 6 years, what about the $2.8 million?
I doubt it gets given back to anybody.
So,
I don't know what happens.
So I guess the lesson is to start your own spam business,
seriously.
Right? Because so for $2.8 million, he goes to a first, you know, probably a minimum security prison because he's, you know, he didn't actually do anything violent. He was white collar or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he gets out, he says $2.8 million. You know, for in 6 years, anyone really probably spent six years. He'll probably go for like two.
Yeah, well, it is in Britain, so you know, I don't know, of course, what the laws are there. I imagine it's fairly similar, but I would guess that if he does have any assets gained from this dubious business of his, then they may have seized it.
Oh, you know
so
those
we can hope that he'll be broke.
You know those Ukrainians. They
is that the official term?
Ukrainians. That is what that's what I had told. They like to be called the Ukrainians now.
those
Ukrainians are soft on
those.
Right, exactly.
They're soft on crime over there.
Yeah. Soft on crime, that's what I've heard. I kind of get the feeling that the Nigerians are soft on crime, too.
I can't imagine that. I thought we had buried them with used computers.
Yeah, you'd think that. Emmanuel Nnudi,
wasn't he on Webster?
And Zerbi Okoli were sentenced to 25 years and 12 years in jail, respectively, because they somehow convinced a bank staffer at the Brazilian bank to fund a non-existent contract to build an airport in Nigeria.
Awesome.
They defrauded the Brazilian bank to the tune of $242 million, which caused the bank to collapse, and many Brazilians lost their money because of it. Can you believe that?
I feel bad laughing, but that is
a good
one.
I know. That is... that just blows my mind.
I have to say, I find something very endearing about those Nigerian email scams when they arrive. I mean, it's kind of cute. All the mangled English and the plea to please help me get this money out of the country. And I'm just seeing that applied to this airport scheme towards a bank in Brazil. And it sounds very cute.
You've got to wonder how that airport scheme went down, right?
By the way, it's Niger. If you listen to the BBC World Service, it's Niger.
Thank you for that, Brad.
Yes, that's our word. Niger.
So it's Ukrainians, and it's
that's
Niger.
How the Ukrainians pronounce it, yes.
Okay.
They speak Ukrainian over there.
Thanks for joining us today, Brad. I'll just be muting your microphone now.
Well, just, you know, now this is going to come out Monday, but I want it to be noted that we are recording this the day before Thanksgiving. So
that's right.
Now, I came to the office today in my best outfit. I got my sweats and my college shirt on. And,
right.
And I didn't, you know, bathe today, but I bathed today,
sometime last
Wednesday.
Week. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I don't know. It's I usually go by odor.
So do we. Yeah,
yes.
Your odor.
I noticed that they put me in my own room now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Tom, you're just lucky that you're not on site. That's all I've got to say.
Well, I don't think we need to be going around talking about what each of us is wearing.
No.
I mean, I work out of my house, so the less said, the better.
Yeah, but I'm in an office
right
building.
Now.
Oh, God. Yeah, let me just say, I'm naked.
Great.
Hear that? Guess what that is?
Oh, no!
Are you proud of yourself, Brad? What is your mother going to say when she listens to this podcast?
I don't know. Do you think she... I don't... Well, actually,
she'll
listen. She listens. Yeah, she listens to him.
Yeah,
hi, Mrs. Wardell.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for listening. Okay. Wow. Moving on, I guess. So, have you guys heard about this $100 laptop?
No.
Okay. Well, it's actually been in the news for a little while, but we hadn't covered it. In January, the Media Lab at MIT proposed this incredible undertaking, which is a $100 laptop that is specially made to be given to children in developing nations. And the idea is that they're going to be able to mass produce these laptops at a cost of about $100, maybe $115 each. And they're hoping to sell them in lots of, you know, 100,000 or a million to various countries who will then give them to school children so that each child can have a laptop, which I think is, you know, a very noble undertaking and, it's an incredible undertaking. It's a huge project.
It also doubles as like a notebook computer and an e-book, et cetera, et cetera. It's got Wi-Fi capability. There's quite a bit. Gone into this project.
Right, there is, and they're really neat little laptops. You know, I mean, it's not like you're going to be playing, really graphics-intensive games on them. That's not what these are for.
It's not a Quake 4 machine or
exactly.
Anything.
They don't have, you know, a lot of memory. They don't have tons of processing power, but you're talking about, you know, stuff that school children can do with them, you know, text-based stuff, doing their papers, surfing the internet, that kind of thing. They have, they're trying to make them durable. So, for example, when you close the laptop, it becomes hermetically sealed. So, you know, little, you know, dirt and stuff can't get in there. if you don't have access to electricity, which is possible, then there's a hand crank that you can use. There's different reports on what the ratio is. I heard one report of 10 to 1 and one of 30 to 1, where if you crank it for 1 minute, you get 10 minutes of power. And some other people said it was 30 minutes of power. But either way, you've got this hand crank. It's just a great little device. Recently, I guess, Apple offered to let them have OS X for these laptops. And Steve Jobs was turned down.
Yeah, but what was the reason for that? It might have been like the power consumption or something.
Because
like that.
They are insisting that they're going with Linux. They want it to be open source. They want it to be something that people can learn to manipulate and work with.
Yeah, they said they wanted to go with AMD-based Red Hat Linux systems. And when asked why, they simply said they wanted their users to be able to tinker with the OS. There was also concern that Steve Jobs and Apple had a hidden agenda, because if the laptops became popular and took off, OS X would become the dominant software in these third world countries. So they're going with open source, and they want to be able to, use that model.
So,
okay.
You're not buying that, Brad?
Eh. It sounds pretty, I don't know, I'm a capitalist, evil capitalist at that.
Sure.
So I hear, we don't want to have Apple OS X on there because, it might somehow benefit Apple someday. It's like, well, duh.
Right, exactly.
That was terrible. It's only a good deal now if they could prove that Apple was going to get, shafted on the deal, then absolutely, let's put it on all the machines. But because there might potentially be a benefit to Apple,
I hear you on that, Brad, but that wasn't the primary reason for denying them.
Yeah,
the reason was because they wanted to use Linux.
Exactly.
Hey, if they go with Apple, it gives Apple a lot of leverage over the program that I think I can understand them wanting to avoid.
I can understand that, but if their reason was purely that because they don't want Apple to someday, be a dominant whatever, it's like...
I heard that they want the users to have an open source operating system.
Yeah, there are some people out there who are speculating that maybe Steve Jobs and Apple have this hidden agenda, but that's not the primary reason for going with Red Hat Linux. The primary reason for Linux in the first place is so the software that they're going to be using to teach kids and do the mesh networking and everything else with all these systems is because it's being developed in lab at MIT.
And its open source programs aren't available on Windows and Mac?
Most
open source projects I know of are, because they're open source,
available
on all kinds of platforms.
Well, sure, but a lot of these things are being developed specifically for this project. So they're still in development at MIT right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not a fan of Linux on a desktop. I think it makes a decent free server, but as a desktop OS, I think it's still, I don't know.
Well, I hear you.
I want to recommend Windows because, it's a cost issue. $100, you have to be putting some free OS. But if Apple is willing to give it for free, then I would be very interested in knowing the specifics. Having an open source operating system, it's like, I'm a lazy American. I make no bones about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm cranking a thing in order to keep it on, right, I'm having to use my muscles have long since atrophied, then I'm not dinking with the operating system either way, I'm just trying to get to my freaking app because I'm going to have to re-crank up the thing. I'm not going to be messing around with, building my own kernel.
I hear you on
that's
that.
Just me.
And of course, these are going to children in developing countries. So, who may or may not have any computer knowledge at all.
Right. Is the goal to turn them into little open source developers, or is the goal to make these people familiarize themselves with modern, state-of-the-art technology or reasonably state-of-the-art technology so that they can compete in a, globalized world market for jobs and other opportunities?
Actually, neither.
What is the goal then?
What they want to do primarily is teach kids how to read and how to interact and adapt to new technologies and have access to information and technology that they might not otherwise have.
Well, how is that any different than what I just said?
Because we're not going to turn them into little open source developers.
And I said that's not the goal. I said I bet the goal is that to give them access to reasonably good technology so that they can eventually become competitive in a global market. That is, know how to read, know how to use modern applications, know how to interact and use modern communication tools so that they can join the rest of the world and take part in that in those opportunities.
Oh, sure.
And you don't think they'll be able to do
definitely.
That with
Linux? Oh, I think they'll be able to do it with Linux. I just suspect that they would, that, you know, if, you know, I have bashed the Mac so many times in the show, so this is going to sound crazy, but if, and this is a big if, Steve Jobs, there aren't any strings attached, that they say, look, we'll let you have Mac OS X, we'll give it to you free, and our justification for it is that if this program takes off 5, 10, 15 years from now, the Mac OS will have a much bigger market share with these people because this is what they'll be used to. I think that's fine. But you know, obviously, if there, it came with strings attached where you, they say, well, by the way, you have to install all this stuff or you have to do things our way or we're going to have control over the marketing and distribution, then sure, they should shoot them down. But I mean, I'm speculating. I don't think any of us know exactly the full
that's
reason.
True.
But
that
if the reason was purely they just want an open source operating system, then I think that's playing politics. Open source is just another licensing scheme for software. There's nothing special about it. Open source does not mean free, by the way.
Well, we're going to link to the laptop project on the MIT website, on the Power User website. So if you are interested in learning what MIT directly has to say about it, then they've got, you know, an FAQ on there and some images of the actual computer. So head on over there and check it out. Next topic. You know, did you guys, I'm sure Brad has, and I suspect the you two, Derek and Tom, have as well. Did you guys read Fahrenheit 451 at some point in your lives?
Never read it.
Never read it.
It's a pro book. It's a pro book story.
Yes, ma'am, I have. I've even seen the Francois Truffaut movie.
There you go. Well, that's our future. I've decided, in fact, I'm not certain that I'm happy about it, but that's going to be our future. Books are outlawed, and TV is the all-consuming passion of the average household. That's what's going to happen in the future, I think. Of course, I'm basing this entirely on what the Magic 8-Ball told me, and also on a couple of stories that I found on the Internet, so I suppose there's some room where I might be wrong in there. But first of all, TiVo is going to begin offering to let subscribers transfer their digital video that they've recorded with their TiVos to iPods and Sony PSPs. They're going to begin testing the service in the next few weeks, and pretty soon people are going to be able to, you know, record stuff on their TiVo, put it on their iPod, and they'll, wherever they go, they won't be without TV. That scares me, quite frankly. I think that's too much TV. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, they also said that about cell phones. You know, if you can't get away from a phone once in a while, you'll just go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And now everybody has a cell phone,
right.
And sometimes multiple phones.
And look what it's done.
Crazy.
And they've gone crazy, and they're all
yes,
idiots. And
then right. It's... And they can't be without their cell phones. Which...
We're just going to get idiots.
Hold on, I'm still trying to download my song.
Right, exactly. How's that going there, Brad?
Yeah. I come with gifts there up in my bum.
Stop. God. We're going to be releasing a Christmas album before too long with just Brad singing various songs. Yes, that's the plan. Also, Brightcove, an internet television startup, is planning to announce. This kind of confuses me. It plans to announce on Tuesday.
But they're not sure. We plan to announce. We're announcing that we plan to announce
exactly.
The Montgomery Burns Award for the.
We're not making any promises, but we plan to announce that they have attracted new high-profile investors, including America Online and Interactive Corp. and.
Allen Bank and Trust and Hearst. And
right. All kinds of places that they're making internet TV a reality. So now you can go get your TV from the internet. And, of course, I say that. You cannot get everything from the internet, but they're going to put some older shows up there for free. And then if you are a TV show, you know, if you... I've always wanted to make a TV show. The idea is that you go out, you make your TV show, you can upload it to this service, and if you want to allow them to stick a 30-second commercial on there, then you can upload it to their service for free, and then people can go download it if they want to watch it.
Not only that,
and you think this is bad?
Actually, I mean, I'm pretty excited about that part of it because it sort of opens the door for, you know, indie TV makers to go out there and try their hand at it, you know, and see what we can come up with. It might give us a whole new realm of TV to watch, and that's where the danger is, my friends. There's, like, too much TV all the time. That's what I'm concerned about. Occasionally, just remember, you need to get out of the house.
Just remember what happened to Clarice, or whatever your name was.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she did a little too much thinking, if you know what I mean.
I see, yeah, okay. So I should stop thinking and just...
Just go with the flow.
Right. Let's find
Clarice,
out.
Clarice, what are you talking about? What is that?
Isn't that the character from Fahrenheit 451 that was always thinking too much?
Oh, I had... Wow, you actually not only read the book, but remembered the character's name.
Yeah, seriously.
That was good.
They have weird names.
He Googled
it. I mean, how can you forget a name like Clarice or Clarice? I can't remember. It starts with a C-L-A, Cla or Clara, and there was a Montag guy. You know, the guy I relate to wants to keep people from thinking.
Yes, yes, that's Brad.
What did happen to her?
If I recall, she mysteriously died. She was, that's all I remember.
Yeah.
She died.
Spoiler.
Right, spoiler alert. She was not a main character, I think.
These things, I mean, these developments in a way are exciting. I mean, it's just part of the democratization of media, for better and worse, that goes into film with the proliferation of digital video, and now anybody can make an independent film, and we're seeing that pour into TV. And, you know, while it certainly arguably waters down the quality of it as a whole, it just allows so much more opportunity for not only more trash, but more people to get involved who have some insight and some vision and creativity.
I totally agree with you on that, Tom. I think my fear is that television is going to become... I mean, it's already now, everywhere with us all the time. We can't get away from it.
Well, it's just communication that's visual. I mean, books are just communication that isn't visual.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you had some people, not on podcasts, but at city councils or whatnot, when Gutenberg rolled out movable type for his printing press, saying the same thing.
Probably,
part of how, we now can control more and more how, when, and where, and what we watch on television. You know, TiVo let the toothpaste out of the tube, as it were, and there's no stopping it now.
Right. I hear you on that, but my fear is that there's a lot of people out there who say, well, television and movies and all that, but, you know, we'll focus on television for this show, is just entertainment. So why are we worried about it? You know, and it's not just entertainment. It really is, as Brad said, it's the way we communicate with each other. At least it's one of them. Mm-hmm. So when people, you know, get out there, they're like, you know, I can put any piece of crap up on the internet, then, you know, it does kind of, I don't want to sound too overly dramatic about it, but it can really, I think, have an effect on, certainly the way we communicate with each other, the way we see the world, the way we interact with the world around us.
Yeah, you don't want to... I mean, that's one thing that is nice about books, is that you can pretty much guarantee the quality. Which reminds me, did you get... Kristen, do you have my copy of Lady Chatterley today? Because I want need that back. Because, you know... But yeah, the smut and crap on TV, though, is just disturbing.
I'm not making an argument that books are necessarily better. I'm just saying that there's...
Well, I'll make that argument. I mean,
there should be a limit. I mean, that's like a whole separate argument whether books are better than TV or movies, right? But, you know...
There is something uniquely insidious about television, though. Mm-hmm. I do agree.
Because you can just sit there. You don't have to put any effort. You can just sit there and be fed.
How passively you enjoy it. Yeah,
exactly. And seeing often is believing for people, and they'll sometimes, you know, they'll drink in anything that they see on television and believe it as fact when it is not necessarily fact, which I think is, you know, if it'd be one thing if we were all quite advanced at critical thinking, but we're not, you know. Thank
well,
you
I don't know.
My point
I,
to me,
when, you know, I only watched Smallville, Family Guy, and The Simpsons, so it's, you know, anything else is just, you know.
There you go. And those are quality shows.
Maybe backyard. And TiVo always records every day Backyard Habitat. So if I want, I could watch that if I wanted to.
Right.
What is Backyard Habitats?
It's a show in which you can make your backyard more hospitable towards living creatures.
Oh, that's adorable. I will go on record as being the Luddite here. I don't have television. I don't have cable. I don't get an antenna. I barely get CBS, like this fuzzy antenna reception. But mm-hmm. I am very removed consciously, and I mean it's intentional.
Well, how do you watch West Wing?
Right.
I don't watch West Wing.
He will on the internet now. You can't.
I'm not copying anything, but I've been told that you can download certain shows. through less than ethical means,
yes,
and maybe, possibly, I might inadvertently, one of those might fall onto my hard drive.
I see.
Now, let's get to the brass tacks, Tom. Have you watched The Simpsons or not?
I've seen one episode of The Simpsons in my life.
You're damaging me now.
I know, I'm sorry.
Of our Simpsons references that we make, they mean nothing to you. They're just words.
It takes a while for me to catch up with them, but I know they've filtered out into popular consciousness. Like, for instance, dough, that's something that Homer says.
You guys may not have known that.
Yeah, but when people go dough, that's a Homer thing.
That's good, Tom. That is good.
No, that's the thing. It's a lot of these things sort of seep into popular consciousness, and having never really seen The Simpsons, that's not entirely true. I've seen a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. But I knew about Simpson sayings and quotes and stuff long before I'd ever seen any of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is good news, though, because I can just kind of take little bits from The Simpsons, say it, and I would just seem like I'm more witty.
There you go.
Than I really am.
Right.
Oh, it is shorthand for wit in so many circles. I know. Yeah, The Simpsons, and that's a lot of how television works. Is it creates this sort of common vocabulary that people use, and and there you go.
Exactly, Tom, why I think television is more than just entertainment because it does create that common language. Having said all that, of course, how do you think not having television has impacted or not impacted your life?
Well, I say I don't have television because it's a great time waster, and I find that I will sit in front of it and just let it run. I do watch some television, but I either rent DVDs or I watch it at a friend's house. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend has TiVo, and I just am very careful about controlling what I watch. But if I had television here, I would watch all sorts of crap that I wouldn't normally watch, and I just want to be careful how I spend my time. And I watch a lot of movies. I'm really big into movies, so I probably watch as much television as the average person. I just rent movies more often. So it removes me from certain water cooler conversations. That's the case.
Right.
That's what I like about TiVo, though, is ironically, people come when I first got my TiVo, I said, well, do you really watch that much TV? And I'm like, no, I don't. That's why I got TiVo, is because and a few times I want to sit down and just veg, I want to watch what I want to watch. I want the equivalent of being able to, you know, like Tom does. When he sits down and wants to veg, he gets a DVD. He has total control over what he's going to watch. Whereas, you know, people before TiVo, pretty much, or if you don't rent DVDs and all the time, there's certain times you just want to sit down and veg. You turn on, and pretty soon you're like watching, Pat Sajak spinning the wheel or whatever crap's on. And TiVo, I can sit down and I can watch Smallville or Family Guy I think I named the three shows. But I watch those over and over again.
Yeah, right. Well, interesting. That's an interesting conversation.
Derek and Kristen, do you guys watch a lot of TV? Is that a big part of your cultural diet?
I watch TV. I watch a lot
of TV. Kristen's watching TV right now.
Yeah, that's true. See, unfortunately, for example, my husband has the ability to actually work and watch TV at the same time, but I don't have that. I don't have the wherewithal to do that. If the TV's on, my mouth is hanging open, unfortunately, and I'm just,
the drool.
Watching. Yeah, I'm just gone, unfortunately, which is what I really don't like. I guess that's why I have kind of this. I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who can achieve things while watching TV, but I'm just not one of them. So I do have an underlying antipathy, I suppose.
What about you, Derek?
I don't own a television either.
Wow.
My roommates have TVs, obviously, and actually I do have a TV tuner card in my computer. Geek.
Yeah.
But I don't watch a lot of TV.
Is it a Hopage one?
No, I used to have a Hopage. It's a ATI All in Wonder. Yay, ATI.
Cool. So I think I'm like the biggest TV person here, unfortunately.
Well, you are a girl, right? So, I mean, you're not really, it's not expected.
Right, it's my job just to sit and eat bonbons and watch TV, right?
I'm kind of with Tom.
Last thing
on
we
that
want is some, chicks thinking and stuff. They start having ideas. And
I'm so going to kill you right after
this
show.
My door's locked. My team of therapists say I just need to stand up to you.
Right.
Actually, they think you're more of a boogeyman figure that I invented.
Right. Well, thank you for the stimulating conversation. Moving right along, speaking of big-time wasters, the Xbox. Who here has one? Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm the only one.
Reviewer boy does, Mr.
You guys didn't.
I'm a famous reviewer chick.
You folks didn't do your term of service in line at a Best Buy on the last week.
As we had talked about last week, my husband Paul was very interested in being one of the first kids on the block to have an Xbox, and but he wasn't so committed to it that we, you know, went out, you know, the day before to line up or whatever. So we didn't go out until about 11 p.m. that night to see if there would be any available. And we stopped at our local Meijer, which is kind of like a Walmart, for those of you who are not in the eastern part of the United States. We didn't see any lines or anything, so but there were a couple of people there who were looking around, wondering if they were going to have any. So I went and asked the manager, and he said, oh, yeah, they started lining up at 8 a.m. this morning. They're back by layaway. And they had only had 12 Xboxes, and there were like 15 people in line already. So, and having talked to some other people who were looking around, we realized, we found out that it was the same everywhere. So, in fact, we did not get our Xbox because we did not line up that morning at 8 a.m.
Well, so you're a loser is what you're saying.
We're losers. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And a lot of people, Kristen, who did line up at 8 a.m. that morning also did not get theirs.
You know what really kills me, though, is that people who pre-ordered the Xbox in our office did not get it because they ran out of stock.
Right, right.
Which is, how can you run it? If you've pre-ordered it, aren't you, you know, doesn't that mean you get one? That's what I thought.
Well, that's what you would think, but that's sort of between the retailer and Microsoft. I mean, all signs point to Microsoft simply not having enough units to pour into the retail channel, and the retailer is not anticipating this. I mean, I think Brad last week speculated that this, well, there is some speculation this is an intentional shortage in from Microsoft to generate hype, which I personally think is absolutely incorrect. I mean, I think this is a genuine shortage. There are a couple of things going into this, partly Microsoft wanting to do a worldwide launch rather than phase it out according to regions. It'll be out in the next, I think, couple of weeks in Japan and in Europe. And I think they're just having a hard time getting out the numbers that they need to release in all three markets simultaneously. So we'll see. We're recording right now before Thanksgiving. The big test will be the day after tomorrow, which by the time you hear this will have been the day before yesterday. But the Black Friday after Thanksgiving. it's a time travel conundrum. Don't think about it too much. The big test will be Black Friday, the shopping day after Thanksgiving. This is when Microsoft really needs to have all of these units in the retail channel. And speculating before the fact, I don't think they're going to be able to have as many out there as they should.
Well, that is the question. I agree with Tom that we'll know pretty soon whether it's manufactured, whether they've manufactured a shortage or whether they simply didn't manufacture enough units. I tend to agree with Menzel on quarter2three.com, who wrote the following. In just the last 2 weeks, even though they would have known about this quote-unquote shortage, Microsoft has again and again reiterated their projection of selling 3 million Xbox 360s in 90 days. So in order for them to possibly make that number, they would have to miraculously come up with a crapload of units. And I think that, I think that the shortage is largely designed to help build up a demand, an artificial demand for it. And if it's true, then it's, I mean, it may be, we don't know. Ars Technica has an article pointing out that, no, there is a legitimate shortage, and the cause of it is that the full version has this special new hard drive in it, this, I don't know, removable hard drive or something like that. And I guess those are kind of, there's a shortage of those parts, which is slowing down the manufacturing of the full-blown Xbox 360s across the channel, not to mention all the other issues of trying to do a worldwide launch. So I don't know. I could be wrong.
One reason that I have a hard time buying that story, Brad, is the people who have made pre-order. Oh, the one that this is sort of an intentional brief shortage, and that Microsoft
You don't think that because they would never take a chance shortchanging people who pre-ordered.
Exactly. People who had pre-orders from several months back have been called by retailers and told, "Look, we can't honor your pre-order anymore." Basically,
but that's because of the retailer. That's a retailer's decision.
Right, and the retailer is making that decision because they haven't received assurances from Microsoft that they'll have the product in time. If Microsoft, who knows what's going on between retailers and Microsoft, but all signs point to Microsoft telling retailers, look, we're not going to be able to get you enough units to honor your pre-order agreements you've made with your customers. So the retailers are having to call customers and say, we can't necessarily honor your pre-order. That's
a pretty drastic pressure. Isn't it true that the retailers are basically only reserving a percentage of the units that they're allotted to pre-orders, and the rest they're putting out for the people who are waiting in line?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. Why do you say that?
Because that's what I've been reading.
Oh.
that I mean, you know, people are waiting in line. I mean, you know, people who aren't getting their people who pre-ordered in July are not getting their units that they pre-ordered, and yet that store still has some number of units available for people who wait in line at, you know, starting midnight, waited in line.
Well, that may be.
Midnight.
Right.
I think
that
they may split it. They reserve some for pre-orders, and they reserve to put some on the shelves, knowing,
sure,
hey, we're going to get those people's money who pre-ordered anyway.
That may be, but the fact of the matter is that they don't think they have enough to meet the pre-orders that they thought they would get a few months ago. I mean,
right.
they
we will know very soon. If Microsoft has enough units in the channel so that by Christmas they're able to get their 3 million unit mark, then we know that something was fishy.
But I do think that there is I do think Microsoft is having problems. I mean, my prediction, which by the time this airs will be moot one way or the other, is that Black Friday will indeed be a Black Friday for Microsoft. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the only one here that has one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
So, Tom, how do I put this delicately? What you doing after Thanksgiving?
You guys
come over?
Yeah, play the Xbox 360. I do have to say, though, I don't think you guys are missing that much. Don't feel bad you don't have one. I'm not terribly impressed.
I've heard the graphics are over 10% better than the regular Xbox, though. I mean,
it really, we've really been spoiled by new console releases and how they jump up generations. When the PlayStation first came out, the PlayStation 2, the GameCube, even the Dreamcast, new console launches tend to make these great technological leaps, and they look better than the last. And I don't know if we're plateauing. I don't know if the Xbox 360 is just underperforming, but it just does not look that. It looks fine. It looks like an Xbox 1.1. I mean, it's an upgraded version. Now, one of the things I've been told, they're really pushing hard their high-definition television support, and I don't have a high-definition television. So I've heard from some people that, yes, on an HD TV, it looks amazing, it looks great. And sure, you can go into retail stores and see it running on HD screens. But even then, I'm not that terribly impressed.
Hey, wait a minute.
What, Derek?
If you don't have a TV, how can you play an Xbox?
Oh, he has a TV. He said he has a TV.
Oh, I've got
a TV. He just doesn't have cable and, you know, any connection to...
No, I use the Dickens out of my television. I love my television.
Wait, Tom, though. I was at E3, and I saw the Sony PlayStation 3 canned demo, and those games looked like the most greatest thing in the world. And I'm sure that those demos are exactly like how the games will actually be. So how can you... I mean, you know, it was basically like watching live action.
One facet of the life of a console system is that over time, as developers are more comfortable with writing for it, it is amazing how good a more mature title after a platform has been out for a year looks in comparison to like a launch title. The stuff right now on the PS2 is just literally, I mean, it's phenomenal next to the stuff that came out when the PS2 launched. So down the road, I'm expecting great things for the Xbox 360, just like I would any console. But right now the launch stuff looks pretty underwhelming.
So what have you played so far?
The really disappointing Project Gotham Racing, Gotham Racing 3 is a racing game. Ridge Racer 6, another driving game. It's very serviceably pretty. There's nothing really new with the gameplay, and you're just driving cars, bumping around against each other. I can think of a half dozen racing games on the regular Xbox or the PlayStation 2 that are far better. There's a shooter called Perfect Dark Zero, which I think is horrible. It's very weak for a launch title. Compared to, again, I can think of a half dozen shooters on the Xbox or the PlayStation 2 that are far better than Perfect Dark Zero.
Like Halo.
Well, exactly. I mean, Halo, that's a little unfair of a comparison. Halo is an amazing piece of work, and arguably the best shooter on a console system.
But how do the graphics compare between, say, Halo and
Perfect Dark Zero?
Yeah.
Halo 2 and
Perfect Dark.
I mean, one facet of graphics is technology, and the technology is certainly there in Perfect Dark Zero. You can see them doing some nice things. But another facet is of graphics is the art design, and there's just not a lot of creativity in Perfect Dark Zero. As a matter of fact, you see some of the same sort of visuals almost ripped off from Halo. There's a lot of stuff set in an African city. It looks very much like some of the levels in Halo 2. I just think that it looks to me very much like Perfect Dark Zero really had to rush to make it in as a launch title and really doesn't have the creativity behind it that the people at Bungie were able to put into Halo. There's a horror-themed game called Condemned that Monolith is making using the Fear engine. I haven't played it, but my editor at one of the magazines I write for who has played it, he thinks it's decent. Rare made a sort of a fantasy fighting adventure game called Cameo, which has a bit of charm to it and looks actually very good. But the launch lineup is, overall, there's no killer app, which is, I think, a crucial thing. You need one game that comes out that's going to sell systems, and there's no sign of anything like that for the Xbox 360. Instead, there's a bunch of titles that, by and large, are to my mind, very mediocre.
Have you tried any original Xbox games in it?
I haven't, actually. I can't comment much on the backward compatibility yet, but there have been some, and I'm strictly going on internet posts, which you should take with a huge grain of salt. There have been some people saying that some games, it looks like they basically just got it to run, and they didn't even test whether or not there were any bugs introduced with the emulation. In other games, there are some frame rate problems. I can't personally speak to the backward compatibility yet.
There were several links floating around the web today, especially in IRC channels, where people had posted movies. You know, they're filming. They just got their Xbox 360, and they're playing a game. And they're like, oh, this is shiny, and this looks good, and I like the graphics here. And it goes, and just locks up. And in one of them, the guy's like, well, that didn't take long. Did you get that on film?
Over on quarter2three.com, there's a Forsaken has a post called, and so let the faulty Xbox 360 reports begin, as people are reporting problems,
right.
I guess.
Well, those are right. There are, of course, any hardware launch, whether it's the PSP or...
It's on going, percentages.
Exactly. There's going to be a small percentage of them that are defective, and that just goes with the territory. And who knows, the people who get those are probably going to complain very loudly, and it might create this mistaken impression that there are all sorts of faulty Xbox 360s out there. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I remember my first two Commodore 64s. I got one for Christmas. It was defective. It died it didn't even work, actually. Got a second one. It came on and died like within 10 minutes. I was not too happy about it at that point. So any major hardware launch is going to have some percentage of people having problems. It's inevitable.
Sure.
But I do think a more widespread problem is it does sound like there are some issues with backwards compatibility. And the major issue for me with backwards compatibility, there are some great Xbox One games out there that I still very much want to play, but I need my Xbox to do it for a couple of reasons. One, it looks like some of the backwards compatibility emulation built into the Xbox 360 isn't working as well as it should. But the more significant problem is there's no way to transfer data from an Xbox to an Xbox 360. I've been playing Project Gotham Racing 3. As I said, it's serviceable. But it reminds me that I would rather be playing Forza, which is an Xbox One game that I love, and I would have to start back from the beginning if I want to play it on my Xbox 360. I've bought all these cars. I've made all this progress, winning trophies and whatnot. And they're stuck inside my Xbox with no way to transfer them over to the 360. Mm-hmm. So if the choice comes between play Project Gotham Racing 3, start over brand new playing Forza in my Xbox 360, or just leave my Xbox hooked up and go back there and play Forza, at this point, I'd just rather go back to my regular Xbox. And I think that's the case with a lot of the games I'm seeing. I just don't have I'm very underwhelmed by the launch, and I think the people who missed out on buying one are not necessarily missing that much.
Well, I have to say then I'm glad I did not line up at 8 a.m. to try and get one, because that seems like it would have been a kind of a waste of time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that your game pick of the week, Tom, is not an Xbox game. Am I correct in that?
My pick of the week, yes. My pick of the week this week is while playing Perfect Dark Zero, an Xbox 360 shooter, I start missing. I mean, there's it some of the things on the Xbox 360, it's a sign of a mediocre game when you're playing it and you're thinking, hey, I'd rather play game X, which does this better.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So my pick of the week actually is a very old game. I say very old, maybe 6 months. While playing Perfect Dark Zero, which is created by Rare, whose name goes back to basically introducing to console shooters the idea that, yes, you can do a first-person shooter on a console. They did this with GoldenEye, a James Bond-themed first-person shooter way back when. This was sort of the first sign that, hey, shooters can work on a console. But then Rare split off into various companies, and one of the companies that split off did this series of games called Time Splitter. And the most recent Time Splitter, the third one in the series, is called Time Splitter's Future Perfect. And it is an example of everything, I think, that Perfect Dark Zero is trying to do. There's a lot of variety. There's this great sense of humor. There's colorful, varied places you go, and there's flashy weapons with different gimmicks that mix up the gameplay. There are a bunch of different modes. There's great online support. So if you can't get your Xbox 360, just go out and find a copy of Time Splitter's Future Perfect. Enjoy it on your PlayStation 2 or your Xbox, and I would say you're far better off than those of us who are slogging through Perfect Dark Zero. So my pick of the week this week is Time Splitter's Future Perfect.
Terrific,
nice.
Tom.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Now, Tom, I wanted to ask you a couple questions. Did your Earth 2160 review come out yet on GameSpy?
No. That will be the week that you hear this podcast. There will be a review on GameSpy of Earth 2160, which is a new real-time strategy game from a Polish developer.
It sounds like there's some pretty cool RTSs, though. Tom made a post on Gwitter3.com talking about some cool RTSs that are coming out this winter, such as Battle for Middle Earth 2 is coming out. And what
Battle
else was coming out?
Battle for Middle Earth
2,
yes.
Oh, yeah, and Big
Empire
Huge Games' Rise of Legends.
Rise of Legends, yes.
When is Supreme Commander?
It's a great time to be an RTS fan.
Yeah, and when is Supreme Commander supposed to come out?
The first quarter of 2006, we'll see Battle for Middle Earth 2, Empire at War, the Star Wars RTS, and Rise of Legends. And I think later in the year, I don't know how... I think they've basically just said something like spring 2006, Supreme Commander from the developer of Total Annihilation, a fellow named Chris Taylor, will come out.
So my life will be over at that point.
Well, one of the things I mentioned in this thread is Chris Taylor, God bless him, he's been doing, the guy is an industry giant, and he's very well spoken. He makes for a great interview. He's a great guy to talk to just about the computer gaming industry. He hasn't done an RTS in a long time, and I'm not terribly convinced that I don't want to say he doesn't have what it takes, because I don't know. And that's sort of the point, is I don't know these days what kind of RTS Chris Taylor would make. I do know what kind of RTS Brian Reynolds at Big Huge Games would make. I know what kind of RTS the guys making Battle for Middle Earth 2 and Empire at War would make, because they've been making RTSs recently. But Chris, I think he's out of the RTS loop, and I would love nothing more than to see him get back into it and make a great one. But for the reason that he's been out of the RTS loop, I'm not as excited about Supreme Commander as I am some of the other RTSs.
I'm putting all my hopes into the Supreme Commander, because, I mean, Total Annihilation was the RTS, as far as I was concerned. And I don't really like Star Wars. You know, I don't like licensed RTSs in general, which kind of, Battle for Middle Earth, Star Wars Empires at War, those are they're licensed properties, and I don't know. There's something about that I don't like. I could probably talk, Rise of Legends sounds interesting, but it's a fantasy-oriented game. So, I don't know. I like Warcraft 3, but I'm a little more scared. I didn't like Age of Mythology as much as I liked Warcraft 3, though I thought they did some really interesting things with it. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, I liked them both, I should say, but not nowhere near to the level of Total Annihilation.
Total Annihilation does have this implacable. I mean, so a lot of RTS fans like you have this. They almost revere Total Annihilation.
Oh, yeah, we're cult. Just so you're clear,
yeah.
We're cult. We have meetings.
Oh boy!
It does have this unshakable place on top of a pedestal for many of you, which I can understand. In its time, it was an amazing, amazing piece of work, and really introduced a lot of mechanics that have found their way into the genre. And
a lot that should be in the genre, but still aren't.
And, like what? What do you say? Like,
one of the most obnoxious things is the whole. in Total Annihilation, you could always queue up what you're trying to build. You didn't have to pay for it. You paid for things as money became available. So the rate of building, if you didn't have enough money to build something, it would just start building it, and then if you ran out, it would use it up. In other words, like in Warcraft, you want to build a knight, you have to have all 200 whatever or all the resources necessary to build that knight. If Total Annihilation had done Warcraft in the same way, you could always queue up that knight. He just would start building it until it ran out. It would use up the resources based on what percentage of it was done.
But you do understand the problem with that is that then people can queue up a lot of units and then suddenly nothing's happening and they're going, hey, my game is broken. I wanted to build these. I can't build them.
Amazingly, it worked pretty well in Total Annihilation. I don't remember anyone complaining about that.
Well, Earth 2160, for instance, that's how that works. I mean, some games have tried this, but I think the reason that more games don't do this is because it's not as idiot-proof as making sure that you pay for something before you order it. I don't think no other game has done it. I think just a lot of games have decided it doesn't work as well as forcing payers to play for something before they queue it up. But you're right. I mean, that was great in its time, and I do think other games have tried that. I think that's the case with a lot of these.
I remember Total Annihilation. Earth 2150, which was a pretty good game, I thought. It was not implemented the same way. It was something in the way that Total Annihilation did things, I guess, is that in Total Annihilation, even the way you got resources was on a per-second basis, so to speak. And I don't know, it's hard to say, but it worked really well in Total Annihilation. And in a few other games, I have seen that, and it did not work as well for the reasons you're describing.
Well, no game is just a list of features. And as much as I can sit here and look at any feature Total Annihilation does and say, maybe another RTS did it, there was something, and guys like you are proof of this, there was something in the way it came together, Total Annihilation, that makes it very special for people. And, I can't in any way refute that. I mean, it was a great game at a great time. It was very well made. It looked great. It introduced a lot of great ideas. And absolutely, I don't mean to take away any props from what Chris Taylor
did. And again, there's another great thread, or actually, it's part of your thread, where people are talking about Total Annihilation in there, and there's some people talking about those mechanics that are really great.
Right.
But I digress.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the game news, gang. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover while we're...
Well, this week on Win Customizer, a couple of interesting things. There's a new build of a program called Sphere XP. I have not personally used it, but apparently it makes your desktop a little bit 3D-ish.
I have used it.
All right. And what'd you think of that?
I thought it was pretty cool. If it's not, the wow factor with me wears off pretty quickly, you know. If it's just kind of like, and then I get tired of it and it starts hampering productivity, I'll just ditch it, you know. But it's neat for a little longer than but I can't see myself using it every day or making it like, when you customize a desktop, you want it just the way you want it. This just kind of makes it 3D, and I can't see it being practical even just yet.
Well, another thing is we did release a new version of the skinning primer. So a lot of people who are wondering, well, what do you customize on your desktop? Why would you ever want to? I wrote up this pretty lengthy, kind of got out of control primer that kind of walks you through how you would change your Windows desktop, what programs you would want to use, where you can go and get them. I try to cover everything that was reasonable to cover. In other words, without it getting redundant, I could name 50 doc programs at this point or a gazillion UX theme patchers, but I usually stuck to just the leader in whatever category for the most part. So that can be found on wincustomize.com at the top of the articles page, where you can just see the link, the skinning primer. So other than that, we're just getting ready to release Window Blinds 5 over at Stardock. So
That's coming out on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's the first major version of Window Blinds in like 2 years. And
it's pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, so that's but other than that, things are just gearing up for the holidays. People are starting to make some cool holiday skins and some cool icons are in development, and I even saw an Xbox 360 skin made by Gabriel that looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then someone made an Elkars skin this week that looks kind of cool, too.
And last week we talked about our Frapper site that we had started up for people who wanted to come, let us know where they were listening from, and we've got 35 people on there now, and it's just, I think it's the coolest thing in the world.
I love that thing. That is pretty neat.
I know. It's so awesome. So if you haven't yet, gotten your name in there, then let us know where you're listening from. We're really interested in hearing from you, and leave us a shout-out. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we saw there's some people from Bolivia on there.
I know.
There's a couple
Mexico, Canada, Europe.
Yeah, there's someone who's in Qatar that's Qatar. In the Middle East. So, yeah, there's it's all over the place. So we have I just love the Internet. It chokes me.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
I also looked on the Neowin. Neowin has a Frapper community, too. I went on there. Wing Customized has one. And so does Quarter to Three. So I went on there, and it's great to see where all these people are.
Yeah, and we linked all of those from the last show. So if you want to, join any of those communities and let them know where you're coming from.
Easy link is over at www.poweruser.tv.
Okay, I think that's everything. Thanks. I kind of want to say have a happy Thanksgiving, but I guess
it'll be too late.
After Thanksgiving, when you
we
guys
hope
listen,
your Thanksgiving so. Was a wonderful one.
Yes, we hope it was terrific. And thank you very much for listening. This podcast was brought to you by neowin.net, wincustomized.com, and quarter2three.com. You can support us by subscribing to us on Yahoo Podcasts, iTunes, Podnova, or Odeo.com. And look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.